portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, any cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, and Native news and events. And as you know, Haley, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. And this portion of Native Roots Radio is presented in partnership with Little Moments Count.
You know, Little Moments Count is a statewide collaborative focusing on helping parents and caregivers learn about the importance of brain development in the first 3 years of life. And we have a guest here, Haley Janan Cotto, and we're really excited to talk to Janan. Let me just give you a quick synopsis of who Janan is. Janan Cotto is a child care systems coordinator for First Children's Finance. First Children's Finance is a national nonprofit organization that provides loans and business development assistance to child care business serving low and moderate income families. And wow, welcome to Native Roots Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we got a bunch of questions to ask you, but we've really been talking with Little Moments Count for, 2 years now, Haley, and we've all talked about how important it is those first 5 years, really, but the first 3 years for sure, and how important it is. And I got a quick question for you: is why do you think it's so important to have high quality, culturally relevant childcare, you know, and especially the first 3 years?
Well, as we know, the first 3 years are critical to brain development. And so children need high quality care as a foundation for their success later in life and in school. And, you know, just to put a spin on it, you know, one of the real important reasons, especially the way FCF approaches it, is that having childcare allows for parents and communities to thrive, especially from an economic development standpoint. It allows parents to be able to go back to school. It allows families to plan and grow their families, and it contributes to employers being able to have productive and happy employees that they retain, and overall is just good for communities and good for the economy.
Yeah, definitely. And we know with that brain development too, the first 3 years is such an important thing. And you know, some places in the state I know are just childcare deserts in a big way. And so, you know, you work as a childcare systems coordinator at First Children's Finance. Can you tell us more about this role and a little bit about First Children's Finance?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been with First Children's Finance since May of 2023. So it is a rather new role for me. I've been in the position of systems coordinator for less than a year. First Children's Finance is the only national nonprofit that addresses the business and finance needs of childcare. And we do that in three ways. We build the financial sustainability of childcare entrepreneurs. We partner with communities to grow their childcare supply, and we influence systems such as tribes and states and territories to provide supports and the investments that they need to sustain childcare and to grow their supply. We feel like engaging on all three of these levels is especially critical to supply building and sustainability of tribal childcare. And so in my role as childcare systems coordinator, I support tribal nations' efforts to build, improve, and sustain their high quality, culturally relevant early care and education systems.
You know, I was talking to somebody about this in another show, and there is such a shortage of high quality childcare. Why has there been such a shortage?
Well, there's been a shortage for a long time. It was definitely spotlighted through the pandemic. And, you know, of course, that is something that we all became aware of. And it's got such a huge impact on the economy. And that's really how, you know, it sort of, you know, came to into the spotlight through the pandemic. I just wanted to share a few fun facts with you all. I wouldn't call them fun necessarily, but they're facts about the impact that childcare has on thriving economies. So 27 million Americans rely on childcare in order to work. The United States loses an estimated $122 billion a year due to childcare challenges. Businesses lose on average $1,640 a year for each working parent due to lost revenue and hiring costs because of insufficient childcare, totaling $23 billion annually. 77% of small business leaders say access to high quality, affordable childcare is essential or important to strengthening the economy and helping workers. So just a few facts there that really highlights how important childcare is to our communities and our economy. And, you know, one of the reasons, the big reasons, is because of the way that childcare is financed currently. So a lot of times there is sort of a decision that has to be made to either charge parents the actual cost of care so that business owners or program owners can pay their workers a living wage and retain them and keep their classrooms staffed and have as many classrooms open as possible and pay their bills and pay their insurance and do all the things and meet their actual costs. Or on the other hand, the decision is to pay less than a living wage, have a hard time attracting people into the field because the pay isn't appealing, have a hard time keeping workers because they can't afford to live on the wage that they have, and then consequently lose their staff, not have enough staff to staff their classrooms, not being able to enroll as many students, you know, as they need to. And so it's really just kind of a cyclical issue. Yeah. Has to do with the actual cost of care. It's so much higher than people really realize.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, why do you think, and why does your organization think that being culturally relevant for our young ones is so important?
Well, I can talk about that from my personal perspective. Personally, I think it's so important to provide culturally relevant care and learning at all ages, but especially in the first few years of a child's life, because it really sets a foundation for a strong cultural identity. And we know there's lots of research out there that says that there are so much better outcomes for kids that grow up with that strong cultural identity in many, many different ways. So, you know, from their resilience, their academic success, their likelihood to be involved in any sort of like abusive relationship or, you know, addiction. All of those outcomes are so much better when kids are connected to their cultural identity. And it helps us preserve our cultures and our language, which we know are endangered, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I feel like, though, when we have a discussion like this, it's on the upswing, and people are more apt to keep culturally relevant things going. So I, Janann, I really appreciate your work. And we're going to take a quick short break. And I'm here with Janann Cotto, First Children's Finance. And we're talking a little Moments Count episode here. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Hey, if you're like a lot of people, you're probably relieved that the holiday celebrations are over. But there's one thing that might stay with us from the holidays besides all those gifts, and that's COVID-19. Numbers from COVID are going up as we spend more time inside. And Native Americans are seeing even bigger case spikes. With all the indoor celebrations over the holidays, you may have unknowingly been exposed to someone with COVID-19. That's why it's important to stay vigilant. If you notice any symptoms like a fever, a tickle in the throat, or heavy fatigue, take an at-home test. They're still free and can be ordered at sayyeshometest.org. If you do test positive, you're eligible for free treatment, and no health insurance is required. Visit health.state.mn.us to connect with providers and receive your treatment. Let's make 2024 the healthiest year ever, securing a brighter future for our Native community.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
This portion of the show is supported by Little Moments Count, who is a statewide collaborative focused on helping parents and caregivers learn about the importance of brain development in the first 3 years of life.
Hey, did you know, Haley, that nearly 80% of brain growth happens in the first 1,000 days in small moments of interaction, like talking, playing, reading, and singing, help create the pathways to build a child's brain during this early stage in life.
Yes, and you can learn actually more facts like that at littlemomentscount.org.
Hey, we're here with Janann and Cotto, and we are talking about the child care system and First Children's Finance, and really a lot of information about the background and how important it is for not only early childhood but development, but also the people that take care of our little ones, and how you guys support and with child care across Turtle Island. So really happy to have you on and talk a little bit about this. I have a quick question, Janann, and one of it is, you were in the Twin Cities here this past week. Can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing here?
Yeah, I just landed at like midnight last night. So First Children's Finance hosted the early care and education collaboratory convening of tribal nations. We were in town. We had gathered 10 tribes from 6 different states. We came together at the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank, which houses the Center for Indian Country Development. And we brought cross-functional tribal teams together. So not just education folks, but folks from representing department leadership and divisions and levels of government from across the tribe to come together, step away from their everyday work to have the time and the space to focus and look at what they have in their early care and education systems and what they want to do, where they want to go, set some priorities, and really start thinking about some planning improvements so that they can build and sustain what they already have. We had some really good speakers, very inspiring presentations from the Tribal Child Care Association of California. So there are over 100 tribes in California, and they were able to mend their relationship with the state. And now the state is giving tribes money to support their ECE systems because of that relationship building. So they told their story. We had two women from a licensed child care on Fond du Lac Res called Grandma's House, which is a land-based immersion preschool. And they have an incredible story of how they developed this grassroots program for families in the community. And they're building language speakers. And for some families, the kids are the first ones speaking in their families in four generations. And so wow. Just really inspiring speakers. We had the Center for Indian Country Development share a couple of really neat data tools that they've developed that can help tribes make data-informed decisions and also help tribes see what other tribes are doing and what they're successful at in terms of like their business kind of planning, the kind of loans they're getting, who's lending to them, how they're getting access to capital, who's using the new market tax credit, and just some really, really cool information learned, including First Children's Finances, a level essential elements of the ECE business ecosystem, which is our assessment and planning tool and really takes like a cross-functional look at systems and helps leaders think about like each element, each component of a system and how they all kind of like work together to help support ECE.
Wow. I was just talking with the mic muted, but that's amazing. So your job basically as a systems coordinator is to help tribes and businesses to maneuver through these financing and opportunities. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Financing and kind of like overall operations as well. So we help tribes see how things like helping support your workforce and ensure the people that are running your programs, your businesses are savvy and they understand how to, you know, appropriately set rates and how to pay people. And, you know, sometimes that's not a decision of like maybe an administrator, but that might be an HR or tribal council question. If it's a question of like, what's the tribal living wage and what are we making sure everyone gets paid no matter what work they're doing, if they're starting at the bottom. So we really help people think about those big systems questions and understand how they intersect to support ECE.
I imagine too, this is really good for nations across the country with their development of their workforce and casinos. If they can have a child care entity next to their casino and take care of their workers, because again, we have such a work shortage here in Indian country when it comes to our gaming, that would help the tribes immensely.
Yeah, absolutely. And FCF currently has a program, First Children's First Nations, we call it FCFN for short. And we, through that program, which is philanthropically funded, can go into communities and help them take a deep dive into a childcare needs assessment to really deeply understand their needs. We talk to parents, we talk to providers, we talk to employers, and we help tribes get to know what the need is so that they can build a plan around that. And one of our tribes is really looking at like that need of, you know, supporting their casino employees. So they're thinking yeah. about childcare potentially at the employee. They're looking at several different facilities. That's kind of part of their plan, doing a facilities audit and looking at where they can place something like that and support the people that work for their business so that their yeah. business is successful.
Yeah, that's huge. How, you know, this isn't in my round of questions, but I'm wondering how can people get in touch with you and get in touch with your organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can find information on our website about our organization overall at firstchildrensfinance.org. They can find information about the ECE Collaboratory at ececollaboratory.org. And if folks have questions for me about the tribal work that FCF does, they can absolutely reach out to me via email. And I can share that in the chat if that makes sense, or I can say it out loud.
Well, it is a radio show, so it would be cool if you said it out loud. And then I'll send up the smoke signals later. Oh, wow. That's
sounds good. So folks can email me, you know, you see CDF people, education people, human services people, tribal leaders.
Yeah.
Send me an email, JANANC@firstchildrensfinance.org.
One more time.
It is Janan, JANANANC. As in cat at firstchildrensfinance.org.
Yeah, I think my nation should be contacting you. This is a good little thing you got going on here. We got like a minute and a half, 2 minutes here left. I'd love it for you to spew out anything you'd like to about your work and your organization here in the last minute or so.
I just, you know, want to share that First Children's Finance is really all about ensuring equity and success for all communities. And it's grown a ton in the past few years, especially since the pandemic, and lots of people were getting, you know, those COVID funds. And so that allowed us to grow. And FCF was really intentional about creating a systems team. So I'm part of a newer team. We've been around for 33 years. My team has only been around for about four. And in response to the pandemic, and part of that creation of that systems team was to support both states and tribes and territories as well. So FCF has been thinking about tribes, knows tribes are important. Sees sovereignty as an asset. Tribes can mm-hmm. do some really innovative, cool things because you don't have to follow what the state does. And so we want to help tribes leverage that and leverage those assets and do really cool things for your communities. So if anyone's interested in that work, please reach out to us. We are so excited to help.
Wow, Janan, this has been very, very interesting, and especially with my other job, I'm really, we'll have to contact you again. This is, really appreciate you spending some time with us and letting Indian Country and our allies listening in on the radio show learn more about your organization. A big pinigi, and thank you so much for being on.
Nahau miigwech.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Up next, State Senator Mary Kunish. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl. J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
As we pack away the ornaments and bid farewell to the holiday season, it's time to unwrap the gift that keeps on giving, getting protected by a COVID-19 vaccination. This is your chance to make a difference, especially as our native communities face higher COVID numbers. Those higher numbers underscore the need for collective action. So answer the call and get vaccinated. The latest vaccines are not just authorized, but they're proven effective against the current variants. This is extra protection, even if you've already had previous vaccines, since previous vaccines will eventually wear off. Plus, the new shots are FDA approved for ages 6 months and up. A COVID vaccine is not just a shot. It's a pledge to safeguard the wisdom and stories handed down by our elders. So join the movement, get vaccinated, and make 2024 the healthiest year ever. Securing a brighter future for our Native community. For more information, including details about clinics offering free vaccines, visit vaccines.gov.
Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas is your pathway to a bachelor's degree. Located in downtown Minneapolis, Doherty Family College offers an affordable education that includes free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, and a Metro Transit pass. As a full-time Doherty Family College student, you'll benefit from mentorship from St. Thomas faculty, along with paid internships and support from Minnesota's largest private college. Ready to turn your dreams into reality? Apply now at dfc.stthomas.edu. Doherty Family College, your journey to success starts here.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of this show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, it's Friday, and we're here with probably the greatest babysitter and grandma in the state here. State Senator Mary Kunish is here with their little grandbaby, and we're about to talk to State Senator. Welcome.
Hamatakiape, everybody. Good to see you. I have little Miss Sylvia here front and center right now. We'll see how long that lasts.
Right on.
I think you see the other one playing.
She's jealous.
Yeah.
You need a bigger lap. She's jealous.
She's a firefighter.
She was making faces at me earlier, and now she's hiding her face in the firefighter cap. So you never know with that one.
That's right. That's the wild one, right?
Yeah. They're both pretty interesting girls.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, before we get going too much, Biden for the score last night, huh?
Yeah, I unfortunately wasn't able to see it yet. I want to go back and take a look, but we had a late day at the legislature, and then there's an organization here in Minnesota that supports women candidates, women winning, and they had a big event last night, and I have a wonderful legislative assistant, Emma, and two wonderful interns. And so we all went over there to celebrate and support women candidates in Minnesota. It is, you know, International Women's Month. So that's where I was last night. But I've heard really good reports that he was on point, really, really sent his message clearly and effectively. And yeah, I've heard really good reports.
Well, Super Tuesday, both Michigan and Minnesota sent him a message too with uncommitted.
Oh my gosh, yes. They from what I understand, and I hear it from somebody who is really in the know, you know, they were saying that if they could get 5,000 people to vote uncommitted, they considered that a win, and it was close to 45,000.
Yeah.
So it sent a really, really loud message, the need for a permanent ceasefire, not just even a temporary one, and an installation of supplies to Palestine. And you know this, Robert, but I don't know if you know this, Haley, and the other folks. My kids are Middle Eastern. Their dad is from Lebanon. Wow. Immigrant, came over to go to college, take a break from their civil war when I met him. And so they have been seeped in the Middle East and the constant issues that go on in the Middle East. My daughter studied over in Amman, Jordan, and my son and my daughter were in Beirut one summer when Israel and Hezbollah got at it, and they were bombing Beirut, and my kids had to be evacuated by the Navy. I mean, really and truly. And so this hits really, really close to home. And I think the fact that my daughters have these young daughters, and to see so many women and children, I mean, and men and boys, I mean, on both sides, you know, this is, I'm not saying that Hamas, you know, gets a green light for any of the work that they did, but enough is enough. And we have to use whatever leverage we have here in the United States to stop this whole situation going on over there. So if I'm not mistaken, I believe that the uncommitted delegate, they earned 11 delegates here in Minnesota. Yeah. And in Michigan, they got one, and they thought that was incredible. But here in Minnesota, there's 11 delegates to go on.
Yeah. Minnesotans don't mess around when it comes to progressive things and what's right and what's wrong. And we know too, not only your family, but your other side of your family too, is like, we know this genocide game, and we're watching it here on national TV every night.
Yep. It's so true. That, I mean, the common historic trauma that I hope it doesn't affect my kids, you know, like permanently. They're adults and they're dealing with it as best they can, but you know, there's Israeli troops lined up at the Lebanese border, ready to go in. They just recently bombed a building in the Bekaa Valley that they said was storing food for Hamas. So they still have family over there, and it's very concerning, and it's very personal to them as well. But you know, who it's such a weird time in this world of ours. I'm just not understanding what is going on.
Yeah, I know.
And inhumanity is horrible.
Right. And it's being amplified and celebrated by some that we never thought we'd live through this again. You know, you and I are roughly the same age, and we went through Vietnam as youngsters.
Yep.
And all these other fake wars. And they learned so much from Vietnam that they didn't televise it, because that was a thing when I was little. We'd see it on the news every night, and that just wore us down to protest that war and get us out of Vietnam. And then you would think that would be the end of wars, but we've had all these little fake wars and real wars, and the 20-some year war, you know, that this country has been around so long, and I think only a small amount of years, I should say, out of the 270-280 years that this country's been around, that it hasn't been in war.
Yeah. It's just really disconcerting. And we think of the money that is spent on war. Ugh. And if we could put that money towards good, imagine what this world would look like. If we could take that and use it for good, for feeding people, housing people, the environment, all of those things, it just blows my mind. I just heartbroken.
what war does to the environment too is just mind blowing. People don't even think about that, but I always say, hey, make one less B-1 bomber for $1 billion and feed the country.
Yeah.
You can have the 12 or 13 other ones, but just make one less and feed the country. But that's not in their jam. That's not, that's, you know, there's too many rationales, too many jobs, too many people that are hooked with it. That's a segue out of this before I start crying here. But, you know, you are working hard as a warrior. There's a couple things I ran into this week, and we'll talk about that maybe a little later. But fresh in your mind, we have a land back situation here in Minnesota that you were helping with. And I wonder if you could tell our audience about that, what you were dealing with yesterday.
Yeah. Yesterday I presented a bill here at the state legislature that would reinstate, the tribal sovereignty of the White Earth Nation to manage a state forest that is on, encased in the boundaries of the reservation. It's a really large forest that's there. And it's been timbered and, you know, the proceeds do not go back to the tribe. There's school trust lands that the tribes have not received any dollars for. I've been trying to find the history of when Minnesota or when the tribe agreed to allowing the DNR to manage these lands and not really get much of anything in compensation, you know, going on. I haven't found it. I found when the transaction happened and when the state of Minnesota, you know, legislated that it becomes a forest that they manage. But I haven't found any kind of agreement or contract that the tribe had put out. And I need that stuff because as a library media specialist, I need information, I need resources and that sort of thing. So I had a bill yesterday that I presented. It's Senate File 3480, and it's the land transfer back to the White Earth of the forest so that they can manage it. And we immediately got a lot of pushback on that, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And a lot of misinformation, of course, went out immediately that the tribe was going to close the borders. It was going to be a closed reservation. Mm. There are private citizens that own homes and own land on the reservation, which is a whole nother thing. There's timber that are being actively cut and replanted and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of companies that are involved in there. There's many lake home in there. And it was, you know, a lot of, as I said, misinformation that they were going to close the reservation. They were going to close the roads. So anybody that lived, you know, was non-native, couldn't leave their house or be on the roads, that they were going to take the land, that they wouldn't allow folks to hunt and fish. And there's some ATV and routes through there as well. Mm-hmm. And that's all, you know, the tribe has assured me that they have no intention of doing that.
Right.
And what the bill really does is it gives 5 years for this transaction to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a task force that would be appointed by the commissioner of the DNR in consultation with the tribe. And they will make authorizations for recommendations of policy change and appropriations to facilitate that land transfer. And so when folks were getting really worked up about that, especially commissioners and that sort of thing, I said, you have 5 years to build those relationships.
Yeah.
You have 5 years to create the agreement. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen in a year. There's 5 years of working together to get this done. And I'm hopeful, but I know it will be a hard task to do.
Well, again, Pini Gigi, for your work and supporting the tribes and starting the process. So I guess that's a big deal just to start the process.
Yeah. Yep. It is.
It really is. So, yep. Hey, we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish, and up next, State Senator Mary Kunish, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
All My Relations Arts presents Okizi. Okizi means to heal, and the exhibition highlights the healing power of cultural revitalization for Native communities. Okizi showcases prints, mixed media, textiles, beadwork, digital collage, and glass sculptures by Native American and Sami artists. It explores Indigenous communities' active healing efforts through language revitalization, land back movements, and embracing traditional knowledge. Visit All My Relations Arts to experience Okizi through April 13th. More information at allmyrelationsarts.org. Life can be hectic. Sometimes the pressure can feel like too much, and the emotions can be overwhelming. Hennepin County's COPE Mobile Crisis Response is here to listen and help you find a way through whatever is going on in your life. Call 612-596-1223 for no-cost crisis support anytime, anywhere in Hennepin County. That number is 612-596-1223.
End-of-life decisions are not easy to make. Hi, I'm Mary T. of Mary T. Hospice Care. It's important to make sure that this difficult time is meaningful and comforting to you and your loved ones. Our hospice team provides an individualized program of physical, emotional, spiritual, and practical care so your loved one is comfortable and not in pain. At Mary T. Hospice, we understand that choosing the right hospice care provider can be overwhelming, but we're here to assist you. Learn more today at MaryTInc.com. We're going to have to
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Can you howl? Howl, Sylvie.
Howl.
They just were intrigued by the picture of the owl, of the wolf. Yeah, yeah.
I heard one of them howl a little bit, right?
Yeah. They're actually really good howlers, but
little wolf puppies.
Distracted. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, we're here with that's right, we're doing a radio show. We're here with State Senator Mary Kunish, and we're just checking in like we do every week. A great land back operation you're going on and getting that first ball rolling. I think that's very important. Also, earlier this week, I know you were presenting a bill about smudging. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. We had a bill from last year that didn't quite get through the legislature. We had a crazy legislature last year, so it didn't get through. But this bill that we heard would allow schools to allow smudging in the schools for our Native students. And, you know, there's lots of programs in schools right now. No, your mom's not here yet. that have really intense Native population in their schools. And those schools that have already allowed it have shown really great difference when kids smudge, and not just Native kids, but other kids, because it centers them. It brings them back to kind of like their values. It's, you know, the cultural significance of it is not lost on anyone. And I was really impressed by how the folks in the legislature on both sides of the aisle really listened intently and asked really good questions about it. The principal from which school is it? One of the schools came to talk about how they implemented in their school and allow it. And then we had a bunch of students come. Suzanne Nash brought a number of students to talk about how important it was to them. Mm-hmm. And it was just, Harding. Was it Harding? I think it was the principal from Harding that came. Oh. And it was just a really, really good kind of introduction and education. And I feel like that's what we do a lot at the legislature is educate folks on these really unique issues. Mm-hmm. And so it passed on to the next. It has to go to state government finance because there are some safety, issues, fire or smoke or whatever.
Right.
But I think we're going to be okay on this one. I think so.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember me telling you this, but when I taught for many years, we did smudge at Harding, and we had full support of the custodians too, because there was an alarm in my studio. I can't remember if it was a smoke alarm or if it was just a, but anyways, they were able to turn that off when we asked to smudge in the morning. And so it was very centering, and it was open to everyone. I'm glad you said that too, because not only my all native homeroom that I had at Harding and that I started in the first one in the district to have an all native homeroom, it was centering, but it was also open to everyone. And I think that's a really good point that you brought up about that.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned, St. Paul School District was the first one in the metro area to allow smudging officially, in the schools.
Officially.
And I was really fortunate to be there the night that they had the hearing and it was approved. And of course, that was led by John Bobolink. And so we will have to see about, recognizing him in this bill for the work that he did in that way.
Yeah. And the one thing about John too, I had an opportunity to speak. And one thing about John is that he was there for the students and the kids, and he was always there for the right reason. And it was important for me to bring up because I was on the parent committee that he never held grudges, and he really never did. He was a good soul and a great leader, and he'll be missed.
He is. And I think we talked about this. I saw him just a few weeks ago at the Onda Young powwow, and he did not look well, but I didn't expect him to go as quickly as he did. So, rest in peace, John, but I'm glad I got to see him that one last time.
And prayers to his family. What a strong family. His son, John III, spoke, and it was like, wow. I know your father's proud of you. He spoke very well and had spoken in front of a large group and did really well. Hey, we only got a couple minutes left here, but I saw you at an event, and the event's happening again tonight and tomorrow, the last few days. And what a scream. I went last night again, and they had the screen working in the background, and it was almost like a different play, because when I went and saw it, and I think it was the same night you saw it, there was no back screen going with the lyrics and different pictures. But I'm talking about the supported by New Native Theater, Bear Grease, the play.
Yeah, it was really a fun play. I think it was the very first night, and I don't know if they were able to get everything, in order, but nonetheless, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And the songs, I love the way they made them Native centered, and the dance, some of the props that they used were so unique. And yeah, it was just really fun. My sister lives up in Fargo, and she saw it up there, and she said, you should try to bring it down to the Twin Cities and sponsor it and do all that stuff. And I was like, I don't have time to do that. So when we saw that it was coming to the Twin Cities, two of my sisters and one of my sister's family went. We went and just really enjoyed ourselves.
You know, I can't believe, and I was talking to Wendy about this, I can't believe, because the original play or the original musical came out in 1978 with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John as the leads. And that must not have been my jam. I must have been too cool or something, because she saw it like 20 times, she told me. And I'm like, that sounds like the story of everyone. Dr. Stately saw it a million times, and then he made his kids watch it. But it was a classic, and a classic bend of that story. It was really, it was a lot of fun. And I might sneak out there tonight, because my daughter, Jelaine, and her husband, Micah, are going to be there. And I might just go up there and hang out with them and go see it again.
Okay.
Ooh.
You're making up for last time from the original one that came out.
Exactly.
Good one.
Yeah.
Well, what else? We got in like two more minutes here. What else would you like people to know, especially with your work up at the Capitol and come visit you and all those things that I haven't been able to get up to the Capitol, and I'm usually up there a lot.
Yeah. Well, the folks that don't want the new flag to come had a rally.
All 10 of them.
Yes. So that was too bad for them, but it just showed that either people just didn't think it was worth their time to come out, or they're just not supporting it. And I'm hearing more and more people excited about the flag and about the change that will happen by the middle of May. And still really, really proud of the work that we did and the process that we went through, and the fact that we won't have, a racist symbolism on our flag anymore.
There is that. There is that. Definitely. Yeah. And I love the flag, and great job, State Senator, for leading the charge on that. And
thank you.
Yeah, 10 protesters. They even had a camera out there to show it. But again, Pini Gigi, for all your work, and thank you so much for sharing your time and your grandchildren's time with us here on Native Roots Radio. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Wapilatanka, everybody. Take care.
Hey, that was State Senator Mary Kunish. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier. Now.